Well, welcome to our 17th and final installment of our primary election political perspectives on WFSU. And before we get underway, a reminder, you are always more than welcome to be a part of the proceedings via phone and email. 414-1234 is the local number, 800-926-8809 if long distance, betwixt you and us. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address, or send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. This program being telecast this evening at 7:30 Eastern Time on 4FSU Comcast Channel 4 in Leon, Gadsden, Wakulla, Madison, Taylor, and Brooks counties. You'll also be able to see it online at our Perspectives page, which you can find at WFSU.org/elections2016. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for tuning our way via radio and or TV. You know, Florida House District 9 comprises much of central Leon County between the Wakulla County and the Georgia state lines, and that includes most of central Tallahassee along with the city's northern, eastern, and southern suburbs. Since 2008, the district has been represented by Michelle Raywinkle Vasalinda. Now, due to term limits, Representative Vasalinda cannot run again for that job and has thus far announced no plans to seek another elected office. We'll see. It's Tallahassee. Anything can happen at any time. There are three Democratic candidates who would like to be the next representative for House District 9, along with a single Republican candidate, and all of them join us today on Political Perspectives. They are, alphabetically speaking, and starting with the Democrats, Loranne Ausley, Arnita Grice Walker, and Josh Johnson, the Republican in the race being Jim Messer. And we're going to kind of go around round robin style here, just kind of randomly, and talk to the folks and far as their background and what that background brings to their candidacy. So let's just defer here to the alphabetical listing first and go on the telephone where Loranne Ausley joins us. And Ms. Ausley, welcome to Perspectives. A little bit about you, ma'am, and what that brings to the table when it comes to House District 9.
So thank you so much, and it's a pleasure. It's actually the first time the four of us have been in a forum together, and I'm excited about this. All four of us love this community, and I'm excited about the opportunity to have this dialogue because it's a community that we love so much. I served as the representative from District 9 for 8 years, from 2000 to 2008. And I'm proud of my record as someone who stood up for the issues that are important to this community, state employees, public education, protecting our environment. I feel like I was a reasonable voice and able to work across the aisle to get things done for those issues that are so important to this community. In the interim, I've spent some time as the chair of Healthy Kids Corporation, and as a community volunteer, and most importantly, as a mom. I've seen issues from that perspective, and I'm looking forward to this dialogue and the opportunity to hopefully represent this community again, because I'm frankly concerned about where things are in the legislature and the lack of long-term thinking on these issues that are so important to our community.
Thank you, Ms. Ausley. Again, alphabetically, we say hi and welcome to Arnita Grice Walker. Lady Jane.
Well, good morning and thank you. And I, too, am glad that we have this opportunity to do this dialogue. A little bit nervous, but that's okay. That comes along with the program, being the only woman sitting in the office today. But anyway, I bring with me 20 years as an educator. I have taught kindergarten, pre-K, all the way up until fifth grade. Not only that, I have three lovely daughters and one granddaughter, so I'm very concerned about all educational issues. As a woman, I believe in we should have equal rights and equal pay, and we'll talk later about how I plan to handle that. Also, I have a background in health care, so I'm very concerned about what is going on with Medicaid and the Medicaid expansion and the high cost of drugs, for sure. And I'm a little bit upset about the way that Florida is being run right now, because I moved away and came back, and my community has not changed in the way that I believe that it should change. So that's why I'm really in this race.
All right, ma'am. And we'll get into some of the nuts and bolts of that as we go throughout the program. We also say hi and welcome to Josh Johnson. Thanks for coming on, sir.
Thank you so much for having me. Just a little bit about myself. I guess I'll start at the professional crux for me. I started in this community as a speechwriter. I'm from here. I'm actually six generations from here. Believe it or not, the man who I'm named after, my middle namesake, Alex Allen, is fifth generations, and his father was actually here. So I'm from this community, born and raised. Everything that I know and love is here. But I started off professionally here as a speechwriter. I then moved into the office of Senator Gary Siplin. I was interested in pursuing a master's degree. And at that time, you know, we were young guys, and we heard that the state of Florida would pay for our master's. And so a lot of politicos flooded the state employment realm. And where I landed serendipitously was a criminal justice agency. So two things happened there for me. One thing is I got to see the disparities between public sector work and public sector compensation. And I got to see the criminal justice system up close, and I became consumed with it. I moved up through the ranks of an organization called the Florida Council on Crime and Delinquency. I've served as its secretary, its vice president, and I now serve as the president of the North Florida chapter. I sit on the Kaiser University Criminal Justice Advisory Board, and I also still currently hold employment for the Florida Commission on Offender Review, the Parole Commission. The criminal justice field has become a passion of mine, a love of mine. And so as I was working behind the scenes in this community, it came to my attention that the seat was opening. And so some other things flooded my mind, and I said, this is a real opportunity for some progressive reforms in a state that need it the most. I think that this part of North Florida is one of our last progressive vestiges, and if we don't protect it as strongly and as hard as we can, we might lose it, and then dissent is lost in this state for God knows how long. And so that's what I'm fighting for, the progressive issues that will drive this state forward and keep my community on the upswing of that forward movement.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Now, one of the three, whether Ms. Osley, Ms. Grice-Walker, or Mr. Johnson, depending on who wins the primary, will go on to face the guy who's right across from us, who is the lone Republican in the race, Jim Messer. And Jim, a bit about you and what that brings to the table of District 9.
Tom, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I am Jim Messer, running for the Florida House of Representatives, District 9. And a little bit about me. I grew up here in Tallahassee, went to elementary and middle and high school here, graduated from Lincoln High School, where I met a young lady named Laurie Strickland, who I ultimately married, and Laurie and I have been married for 31 years. After high school, went to college in Virginia, graduated from college and was commissioned in the Army, started off as an infantry officer, and then went to flight school and was a helicopter pilot for 6 years, and left the Army in 1990, stayed in the reserves for an additional 7 years, went to law school, and moved back to Tallahassee in 1995. So I've been back here 21 years. Grew up here and then came back here because I love the city. I am a board-certified civil trial lawyer, and what that means is that when someone gets hurt and someone needs help, then they come to me, and it may be at the lowest point in their life, and I do what I can to get them back to top dead center. So I've been helping people throughout my legal career to get back where they need to be. And I started off my career when I came out of college in public service, and I think of being in the Army as public service. And I got to a point in my life where I thought, you know, now's an opportunity to volunteer again. I've got three children, Elliot, who's 28, married in Jacksonville, Sarah, 26, married in New York, and Elizabeth, my youngest, is 21 and a rising senior at the University of North Florida. And Laurie is teaching over at Tallahassee Community College, so it was an opportunity to say, you know what, now I want to go see what I can do for the community and go stand on that wall and volunteer. And I looked at the legislature, and I looked at where we've been for the last 20 years. And, you know, it occurred to me that the rest of the state seemed to be getting benefits that should inure to this district. It occurred to me that our state employees weren't getting the pay increases that they so much deserve. And I watched our crime increasing in this district, and I thought, you know, we need someone who can actually get in there, get out of the back of the chamber, and see if they can make a difference. And my thought was, I grew up here. I know folks here. I walk like you and talk like you and think like you. If what's good for me is good for you, is good for the folks in the district, then wouldn't it make sense to take someone who's a moderate Republican, who's, yeah, tight with money, but then we all are, if we have a house or a life or a car, and get that person in the room with the majority that's governing. And that's the reason I'm running. It's not for accolades or a big salary or to try and parlay it into the next political office. I would just like to see our district relevant again in the legislature.
Well, that's something that we are going to get into as we go throughout the discussion, because something that you brought up there, Mr. Messer, has certainly been part and parcel, I think, of the longer-term discussion of representation when it comes to Florida's capital city region, because of the political realities of the legislature as it stands right now, and also the executive branch of Florida state government. So we'll have an opportunity to talk about that in just a few moments. I don't want to back anyone right into our first break that's rapidly bearing down upon us. So I'll take this opportunity to remind our viewers and our listeners that there is another program that is coming up that will give you some fascinating insights on all of the candidates who are running for the various positions we have here in Leon and surrounding counties coming up during the month of August. And that is a TV exclusive production called Bandwagon. And we have two of them because, again, of the multitude of races and counties and candidates that we're looking at. The first one is August 8th, and that is a bandwagon for Leon County races. And that'll be broadcast that evening, August 8th at 7 o'clock on Comcast Channel 4, which is for FSU. 2 days after that, August 10th, it is the bandwagon for Gadsden and McCullough County races, and that will also be broadcast at 7 o'clock. And for the uninitiated, bandwagon's an opportunity for candidates to come and speak their piece for a whole unedited 3-minute period. Say anything you want, and as soon as you hit 3 minutes plus 1 second, the Capitol Cordsmen jump up and sing you into submission. So you have to shut up, because they can sing a lot louder than you can talk. And at the same time, we also then allow the candidates to bring in their supporters, and they wave signs and they jump up and down and make a big ruckus, and it is tons of fun. So hope you can join us for that. Political Perspectives. It's Florida House District 9 with all four candidates who are vying for that position, and we'll be back and talk some more with them in just a moment right here on Political Perspectives. District 9, the four candidates vying for that particular office are with us here at Political Perspectives today. And again, 414-1234, the local number, or you can send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. We just got an email. Let's go around the table on this one. Very, very timely thing. The Florida Department of Environmental Protection held a hearing yesterday all day long, and they were agonizing over some modifications to the state's water quality indices when it comes to different kinds of pollution and chemical and toxins and all that sort of thing. The email, and we'll let everyone have a whack at this one here. At a time when neurotoxic algae is harming the health and economy of the Treasure Coast, as well as here in our area, we saw the Tallahassee Democrat article that was out earlier this week. The Environmental Regulatory Commission voted yesterday to approve a new water quality standard that would increase the level of carcinogenic toxins allowed in Florida rivers and streams. And they reference the I believe this was Tampa Bay Times had an article out on that. What is your response to the vote? What are your strategies for restoring and protecting Florida waters? Let's go backwards around the thing. Let's start with you, Mr. Messer. Your thoughts on that yesterday?
Well, and I read the article about the change in water quality. I look at it in two ways. One, it's encouraging that we've updated the standards for the first time since 1992, and the standards haven't been updated since 1992. And it's good that there are an additional 49 chemicals that are included in what is being monitored. But it's troubling in two respects that this vote was held while two seats on the commission were vacant. And it's also troubling anytime you see an agency permitting an increase in the levels of benzene and arsenic and PCBs in our water. Florida is a state that survives on two large industries. Agriculture is the first and tourism is the second. And you don't want to hurt either one, but I think that it is troubling that we allow these sorts of chemicals to be increased in the water supply when the chemicals, at least from what I understand in reading the information, benzene, for instance, is a byproduct of fracking. And I know that we have the problems that we spoke about earlier of some agricultural runoff issues in South Florida and our South Florida rivers. And so we need to do more to protect the waters that we have in Florida. That's one of the reasons that we draw tourists to the state. And there were 105 million tourists that came last year. And if we have green pea soup flowing out onto the west and the east coast, then that's going to keep tourists from coming here, and that hurts us. Agriculture has got to do a better job of trying to clean the water that goes into the Lake Okeechobee Basin. We need to do a better job of mitigating the Everglades so that we can use that as a filter to try and filter out the green pea soup. But the decision yesterday was promising on one level, but it was troubling on the other. I think that going forward, now that we have standards that have been reestablished for the first time in 24 years, that now we can start looking at whether we need to dial the benzene and arsenic and PCB levels back down. And I think that we have to do that. We have to have the highest water quality in the state, both for the citizens and for tourists and for agriculture.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Mr. Johnson, your thoughts on that?
Well, now the progressive walks into the room. So let me say this. and I love Jim. I love Jim. But let me say this. The fact that we haven't had a change to the water quality in 24 years is troubling to me only up until we reach the breaking point that we understand that as of yesterday, we are now going – I think the number was from 52 carcinogens to 94. We are now going to peak out at 94 cancer-causing agents in our water. Now, I don't want to sensationalize and emotionalize and scare people because this was a deliberate decision that was made by professionals, and the last thing anybody wants to do is hurt people. But I think one of the sentiments of my campaign has been unintended consequences, because I think sometimes as progressives, we attack issues and make people bad. People aren't bad. People are really trying to facilitate sentiments in our community and in our state that thrive. But what they don't understand is that whether it's corporate interest in Central Florida with Lake Okeechobee to the Apalachicola River and all of our environmental treasures and environmental necessities, because you got to drink water, 75% of you and me, okay? And now 92% of 75% of you and me might be laden with carcinogens. And so I think that we have to look at these issues and find ways, because some of these agents do help with water preservation, but they don't help with water quality, and they don't appease sentiments of facilitating community-based environmental policies that are going to carry us through this state. They're dangerous to me, and I wish they would take another look at it. Now, Jim did bring up that you had two seats vacant. I wish that they would have waited to fill those seats as well. I agree with Jim there, because you might have had somebody then bring up a point that so many other people are hearing. I think the business end only speaks business, and they forget the people, and the people are hearing now that the agents that cause cancer in my water have gone up by 40.
Okay. Ms. Grace Walker, you have some thoughts on that too, I'm sure.
Well, definitely. I have some thoughts on that issue. And I'm not going to call it a state where I moved from, but I'm just going to say this, that I am a recipient. My girls as well are recipient of the fact that they had to bulldoze our entire neighborhood down because our homes were built on toxic dump sites. So I do understand the issue. And I think that Florida definitely need to do a better job. And as I say, this is kind of heart touching because I live next door to a lady whose child was actually born with no limbs. And that was from benzene and methylene blue. And so those kind of things, they do exist. But you think about these corporations that they knew exactly what they were doing, but they didn't disclose that information to us. And I can't call their name because we were in a lawsuit with them, or neither say the state. But I'll tell you that this is really real. And to know that it's in our water system here now, it was in our land, and having the goop just bubble up in your yards and things, and you're out there, your dogs, everybody that's being exposed to it, and headaches, severe headaches. I mean, my middle child right now, she has headaches, just, you know, the crippling headaches. And this is from this. The kids couldn't even go out on the playground to play at the particular school that we were next to. So I think that if we have an opportunity to change that right now, that we need to get something done immediately.
Okay. And we'll ask Ms. Osley, anything the legislature can do if you get back into House District 9, can you just go to the DEP and say, hey, nice try, guys, but try again?
Well, here's the thing. Water is North Florida's strongest resource, and we have to protect our drinking water, our coasts, our lakes, our springs. And what happened yesterday is, you know, part and parcel of an administration that has reduced regulation and permitting, abolished the Department of Community Affairs, stripped DEP of long-term science-based staff, decimated the budgets of our water management districts, and now this is what we have. This is not protecting our water, and we need to stand up to Rick Scott and his administration and say enough is enough.
Okay, ma'am. And let's reverse the order here again, going back to something that was brought up initially by Mr. Messer, but he certainly wasn't the first one, that to have good, solid representation for the capital city, which has heretofore sometimes been on the receiving end of, shall we say, some thinly disguised animosity on the part of Republican leadership in the Florida legislature, that maybe a Republican voice would at least save us from some of the slings and arrows, a la the guy who's now over in District 7, Halsey Bashirs. He's advocating for state government workers and all that kind of thing, and at least he seems to get a hearing. If we return a Democrat, would we not put ourselves in an ongoing disadvantageous position when it comes to the realities of the legislature? And we'll leave you handle that, Ms. Osley, first.
So, I represented this community for 8 years, and I'm proud of my record, and I'm proud of my record on standing up on these issues that are important, like our drinking water, like our public education, and like our state employees. We did have two pay raises in my time in the legislature. We were able to, in my bill, it increased per diem for state employees. We created a tuition waiver for state employees, and that might be how Josh got his education. I think I heard that. So it is possible as a Democrat to work across the aisle and to make a difference on these issues. Given the importance of these issues that we're talking about, it's hard to be in the majority and have a seat at the table if you are not standing up. If you're not falling in line with the Republican agenda, and I feel very proud of my record, and I think it's important to be able to be strident on and reasonable on these very, very critical issues.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Johnson, again, as an avowed progressive, if you will, Democrat, we've seen for a long time folks who are Democrats representing Tallahassee since the ascendancy of the GOP in the legislature on the back line. Mm-hmm. And they get up and they protest and jump up and down and all that, and the leadership just kind of says, okay, guys, whatever, and then they go on and do whatever they want. How would you change that dynamic?
Well, I'll frame it to you this way. If that's what happens on the back lines, let's look at what's been happening on the front lines, okay? This is where the Republicans have the majority on the front lines, and let's see what the front line has got us. The front line has got us a criminal justice system that is in disarray with some of these private conversations of prisons. If you look at this year's legislature, they said that the biggest loser was state employees, denied another increase, no cost of living increase, no wage increase. And so if this is what's happening on the front lines, then I am absolutely absolutely a stringent proponent of the back line, because somebody has to offer up, because if nobody's there to at least offer them up, then the mudslide just keeps on going. And I hate, like I often say that I hate to sling mud, but I don't mind slinging a little bleach because it'll keep you clean, but it might sting your eyes a little bit. The truth of the matter is we have to have dissent in this seat. We cannot afford to let this part of North Florida and the state go awry.
Okay. Ms. Grice-Walker, any ideas on dealing with the, again, the Republican majority, should you get the nod from the voters for the seat?
Well, I'd have to say that being an elder of the church and everything else, I think that everybody deserves a right to do it. But I think more or less I would cast my vote for a person who's more close to the issues that I represent, and be it Republican or Democrat or nonpartisan. But I just believe that it's all about the issues. And if the Republicans have not done a good job, then we should return a Democrat.
Okay. And Mr. Messer, I got something on a related line here. Since you're a self-identified moderate Republican, there are some folks in the legislature who maybe are far to the right of you, and you have an R attached to your name, but you still may not get traction in the legislature because you aren't R enough in some people's way of thinking.
Well, Tom, and that's part of the problem in the legislature, not just in our legislature, but nationally and with the people in this country. People seem to run to the left and scream and run to the right and scream, and the person that screams the loudest and the shrillest is the one that gets heard. But the fact is that we don't live on the left and the right. We tend to live in the middle. We tend to govern in the middle. And despite the fact that there are people in the legislature that are very, very, very conservative, and those that are very, very liberal, the great majority of them want to get something done. And I'll say this, it is a great idea to talk about working across the aisle in the legislature. But the fact of the matter is, in the Florida House, you're not working across the aisle. The minority is sitting in the back of the chamber, and it's a super minority now. There's 81 Republicans and there's 39 Democrats. It's great to be reasonable, and it's great to say that that we're going to be strident and we're going to work hard. But the fact of the matter is that having goals hasn't really gotten us anywhere in the past 20 years. And in what I do and in my life, I'm not goal-oriented. I'm results-oriented. And I'll tell you that goals without results are just wishes. And for the past 20 years, we've been kicking the ground and shrugging our shoulders in Leon County and saying, you know, we're going to stand up against that bad old majority and we're going to get them next year. And that just gets us 20 years of next year's down the road. So, you know, my argument is this. Look, yeah, I am a moderate in my approach to things, but doesn't it make more sense to have someone who represents the interests in this district in the room with the majority that's governing than sitting on the back row? I know someone said it's impossible, it's possible to be in the majority and not be able to get something done, and that's the concern. I'll tell you this. It's impossible in the legislature to be in the minority and have a seat at the table. You've got to have someone that can get in there and get results. And I think the citizens in this district really want to see results for the first time in a long time.
Okay. We have a caller on the line. I think Dr. Ed is giving us a call here. We were talking criminal justice issues a little bit before, and I think he's going to add to the discussion here. Hey, Dr. Ed, how's it going?
Oh, how you doing, Tom?
Hey, we're doing fine, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I would like to direct this question to Lorraine Ausley, because when she was in the Florida legislature, if my memory serves me, she supported this Stand Your Ground gun legislation, which some argue actually helped to get Trayvon Martin killed. So I would like to know if she's still supports that gun legislation.
Okay, I'll tell you what, Dr. Ed, why don't we make this a larger discussion here, because there are some other things that are likely to once again be facing lawmakers, if not in this legislative session, then certainly the next one or the one after that. We have the open carry, we have campus carry, we have all kinds of law enforcement. Let's see, should we make attacks on first responders, hate crime? All of this is coming up. So since it was directed to you, Ms. Ausley, talk a little bit about that overall issue, if you will, including and not limited to the Stand Your Ground vote that you made several years ago.
Thank you, and thank you, Dr. Hollifield, for the question, because, frankly, this is one of those decisions that keeps me up at night. There are very few votes that I question, and that is one. And it was presented to us as a very important, as a very emotional property rights law, and it has been completely misapplied. And if I had it to go over again, I would certainly not vote for it. I am very concerned about the direction of this legislature, particularly in with all of the violent crime that we have across our country and in our own community. We have got to keep guns off campus. We have a legislature that has actually prevented doctors from talking to patients or pediatricians from talking, from asking whether there's guns in the home. We need to, we've got to have a serious discussion about guns in the state. And I thank you for bringing that up and letting me get that off my chest, Dr. Hollifield.
Okay, we will continue our discussion along this line and include some others, too, as we come up on our second and final break here on our political perspectives this morning. It's Florida House of Representatives District 9 that takes in much of Central City Tallahassee, as well as the northern, the eastern, and part of the southern suburbs as well. And you're always welcome to be part of the discussion as we talk to all four candidates for that job here on Political Perspectives. 414-1234. 800-926-8809 and perspectives at WFSU.org is the email. We shall return. Perspectives and Florida House District 9 in the offing. Three Democrats, one Republican, and you, 414-1234, our local number, and 800-926-8809, long distance. Well, we'll go to you, Jim Messer. Your thoughts on that, whether it's open carry or stand your ground or Second Amendment rights versus what some people call common sense restriction. Where do you fall on all that?
Well, we have a federal constitution that gives people the right to bear arms, and I know there's a lot of consternation in the country now over some decisions that were made at the Supreme Court with respect to what guns you can have and what you can't. It's got to be a balance. It's got to be a Second Amendment balance versus the Fifth Amendment balance you were talking about. Or Ms. Osley was talking about when she voted for Stand Your Ground, that landowners also have a right to be able to say whether people can come on their property with a gun or not come on their property with a gun. The concealed weapon issue and the open carry issue are issues that are going to be explored again in the House of Representatives. At least I hope they're explored again in the House of Representatives. And those are tough issues because particularly with open carry, you've got to be able to balance that against something that's very important to us. And I go back to what I talked about earlier, which is tourism. And we don't want that sort of doctrine to scare tourists away. And I think you would need a lot of study to look into moving us from a concealed weapon system, which seems to work fairly well for the people that have concealed permits and who have the additional training and then have the right to defend themselves. They're very, very, very tough issues, and they're issues that we need to talk about in the legislature, but they're issues that we need to continue to talk about in the legislature because this is a changing landscape. And whether it's what happened in Orlando or what happened in Sandy Hook or what happened in California or what happened in Dallas, frankly, we need to look carefully at gun ownership in this country, and we need to balance and be careful with what we do constitutionally between the right to own one and the right to be safe from people that have them as well.
Okay, great balance. Ms. Anita Grice-Walker, how do you keep from tumbling off that tightrope?
I'm glad you asked that, but honestly, it is a tightrope. And having served in the military as well, I understand the training and how to use a gun, but I would not want a gun in my house for reasons that, you know, you can get upset with someone and then you just, since I have the right to do this, then I can do this. And I think that if we have proper training, teaching people ways to do things, and from a military standpoint, you know, I look at those two guys who took the lives of those. And I think if we had better taken care of our veterans, or if we have that proper health care that they needed, you know, if we're screening everybody and trying to find out exactly what is going wrong with them, I think lives would have been saved with those two particular guys. But I think when you open something up and you tell everybody they could have this, and they have it, and they don't have the proper training that they need, then that's where we run into problems.
Okay, and well, we will also add that soon to open within Florida House District 9 is a brand new Veterans Health Center. I was just by it yesterday. I thought, boy, their grand opening is almost upon us for that. So, Mr. Josh Johnson, what do you think?
I think that there's a foundation issue. A foundation causation to this issue, and the two things are this. We have to invest more in mental health legislation. It's so important. Every tree has roots, and the roots to these issues are mental health and regulation, the not-so-new-fangled word regulation. We have to get back to a place where identity politics and emotional politics take a back seat to facts and observances and things that we know to be true. We have to screen. I don't have a problem with private gun owners, and I say that as a progressive. I never have. I do not have a problem with private gun owners. I do have a problem with the ease, the egress, the wide egress which exists in somebody who wants to own a gun, how easy it is to purchase one. We just had a gun show here on the south side of town, and I would have been amazed or humored to see how easy it was to walk up to one of those wooden plank tables and purchase a gun, ID, and maybe something else in a waiting period. It has to be harder to purchase a gun, and we've got to invest in mental health, because when we see the disparities between the people who commit these heinous crimes on both ends, there usually is some stem of a mental health concern that could have been caught at the crux, but it wasn't because of identity politics. People think that we're attacking the Second Amendment rights, and that's not the case. That's not the case. We just have to be responsible with legislation.
We only have about 15 minutes left in the show. In fact, a little bit under that. So let me stick with you, Mr. Johnson. You are elected. Congratulations. You are the guy to represent this part of the Capital Region in House District 9, and you hit the floor of the legislature for that first session. What are your top priorities there, like your top three?
Okay, I'll give you my top three. And I hate to catalog issues because they're all important to somebody, but the ones important to me, I think that if I had a bill the very first day, it would be an increase for public sector workers, because I think that it would do well for the morale of my district in particular, and it would also be something that stretched across the state. Now, our district houses the largest economy of state workers in the state, but the functionality of state workers expands throughout the state, and that would simultaneously help my district and my passion while helping everybody across this state. I would then jump in gear, and I would move to some hefty criminal justice reforms, the way we look at recidivism and reentry, the way we look at restorative justice, clemency mandates, leaving civil rights in the hands of executive boards. Now, firearms and things like that can be left out, but the way that treatment over penalization, crimes that are victimless and harmless being treated as if they were heinous. And then did you hear about John Hinckley? John Hinckley got off today. He'll be released. And so you got a guy like that who's getting released, but you have a guy who has a track record of drugs, who's been serving next to John Hinckley, who will see John Hinckley released, and he will still be in prison. I think it's absurd. And then my next issue would have to be environmental issues. And I don't say this to placate or to pander to anybody in the state. I have always been an environmentalist, never heavy on it. But when I see the effects happening in our state from the big sugar corporations and the corporate interests, in the Everglades, in Lake Okeechobee, in the Apalachicola River, and the water quality. I think that it's an issue that we have to get in front of in a common sense way to ensure that the facilitation of the state continues.
Okay, Ms. Osley, same thing. Voters have spoken. You have returned to your former seat in House District 9. Now what?
I continue to work on the things that I've always worked on, which is looking out for our children, starting with the earliest kids in early childhood and children's health, supporting public education. And I work on protecting our land and water and reversing some of these the Republican-led atrocities that have taken place in our state with respect to our land and water. And, you know, I don't think you're going to find any disagreement among with any of us on this, standing up for our state employees. And it's not just a pay raise. It is demanding the respect for government, for the role of government, and for the state employees who carry that out. And that is it's a constant conversation, and it's not just, you know, it's the benefits packages, it's the retirement, it's the per diem, it's the tuition waivers, and in any way that we can talk about and demand respect from the legislature and from the administrative branch for the very able and dedicated public employees who work every day to carry out the business of the state.
Thank you, ma'am. Ms. Grice Walker, again, you're there. You're sitting in that nice office over there in the House Office Building, and you have to get your priorities in order. What do you do?
All right. First, as a teacher, I would definitely want to strengthen our educational system, but as well as increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour and equal pay for women. That's one. And two, I would definitely want to work with health care. We have to do a better job of health care because I think that's where all of our problems stem from. People do not have the proper health care that they deserve. And the last one is restoring the rights of those. If you did the time, then it's over. Now we need to restore your rights so you can be productive citizens of this state.
We appreciate that, ma'am. And Mr. Messer, the 72-point type above the fold at the Tallahassee Democrat now graces your wall in the House Office Building, saying that you got the nod and now you got to govern. So what's your priorities there?
Well, I'd like to see that 72-point type above the fold message say state employees receive pay increase. Look, no one goes into state employment thinking they're going to get rich. They do it because it's honorable work, and they do it because it helps the state. And we have not treated them well for a long, long time. And I know this because in walking to about 8,300 houses so far, I've met employees who have morale that's down, who are trying to figure out a way to get another job. And we need to treat them correctly, and we need to get them a pay increase. And as Mr. Johnson, said, we have a lot of them here. We have 22% of the state's workforce here, and we get a pay increase or per diem increase, a benefits increase. They take that money and they spend it in this district. They buy houses and they buy cars and they shop in stores and they eat in restaurants. And that raises the entire economy in District 9 and in District 8 in Leon County and the Tallahassee metropolitan area. The second thing I'd like to be able to do is carry the flag on the floor for capital projects here. I'd love to see some capital projects, some roads that we can put together. And I'm not talking about 8 lanes of asphalt, but we can rebuild roads and we can get money here to work on our airport so that we can make airfare in and out of here less prohibitively high. And the last thing is that I want to do something about the crime rate in the district. And it occurs to me that the rest of the state of Florida is growing and crime is going down. And in Tallahassee, we've been in somewhat of a state of neutral for a long period of time, and crime is going up. And people that have good jobs are less inclined to commit crime. So I'd like to see job creation here in Leon County and job creation dollars so that we can work crime down, not just with more police and not just by raising taxes, but by structurally moving people into better employment. We do that and we make a better community. So between a pay increase and capital projects and reducing crime, those are the three things that I would like to see, and those would be great accomplishments. And it takes someone carrying the flag and the majority down on the floor that can do it, and I can do that.
Very good. Well, folks, we are almost to the end of our time together. Have enjoyed it so incredibly today, but I wanted to give everyone about a little over a minute, maybe a minute and a half, We'll be as generous as we can with our time for you to make your best possible case for why the voters should vote for you. You Democrats here in the primary, and if we're going on to the general election to face off with Mr. Messer, we'll give him a chance too. So let's start as we began here. Ms. Ausley, about a minute and a half. Your best shot, ma'am.
All my life I've fought for Florida's kids, and I've stood up to protect public schools. I've fought to expand early childhood education. I chaired the Florida Healthy Kids Corporation. That is, it's at the core of my being, and it's something that I believe in strongly. As a representative for this district, I stood up for state employees. The last pay raises that they received were when I was in the legislature. I passed bills increasing per diem for state employees and demanded the respect that they deserve. Finally, I'm proud of my record of bringing some resources back, my role in Cascades Park and the Waterworks building. So I believe we need a voice that stands up for the values of this district, but that can work both sides of the aisle to find, roll up our sleeves and solve problems. That's what people want. Nobody really cares if you're a Democrat or Republican or where you come from. They just want you to listen and help solve their problems. That's what I've done, and that's what I'll do again, and appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Lorraine Ausley. Josh Johnson.
Well, I'll say this. I'll frame it this way. I was watching a movie yesterday, and it was narrated by Morgan Freeman, and he said something to the effect of, through the course of human history, everything that we do is a pursuit to gain time, to get a little bit more time, okay? As a progressive, as a Democrat, I understand that time is our most precious commodity. We have the past, we have the present, and we have the future. What things are we going to do to propel ourselves into the future, to legislate so that our tomorrows and our yesterdays can reconcile themselves? We have 500,000 people in this state uninsured plus and unaccounted for. Does that sound like a tomorrow to you? Does that sound like a tomorrow to you? State workers who haven't had cost of living increases and raises for years. Does that sound like a tomorrow to you? No, we have to posture ourselves to enter tomorrow, whether it be environmental issues, criminal justice reform, reentry, things that harness the sentiments of tomorrow as well as today are the things that I'm interested in. And so that if you can see yourself getting on board with those issues, I would appreciate your vote for Josh Johnson on August 30th.
Thank you very much, sir. Arnita Grice-Walker.
Well, let's see. Let's see. I think that I am the best candidate, and I definitely need your support on August the 30th, and I'm going at it backwards because I think that your issues are my issues. As I face retirement, I'm very concerned about what is going on with our retirement and how we put our funds in it. I think that they need to be a little bit more transparency with it. As a woman, I believe that we need equal and fair pay for a woman. Medicaid expansion. We need to bring that back. And also, I believe in funding, and I am an adamant believer of the Amtrak train system, that it should not have taken this long to get it back on track. So I think that I am the voice, and I think it's time for a change. And if we keep doing things the same way, we'll get the same results. So I'm here to make a change. So I need your support on August the 30th.
Thank you, ma'am. And Mr. Jim Messer.
Ms. Grice-Walker is exactly right. It is time for a change. And we've been doing the same thing for the last 20 years. And as we've been doing that, we've watched the rest of the state of Florida sort of move away from us over the horizon while we've been here in Tallahassee. And it's become a situation where the rest of the folks in the state of Florida point the finger at Tallahassee and say those bad old politicians in Tallahassee, not realizing it's their own representatives that come up here. It's great to have great ideas, and it's great to say that, here's what I would like to do, or, here's what I've done in the past. But we have to have effective representation. We have to have someone that will actually move the needle back in our direction. We've tried the same thing for the last 20 years, and we've gotten the same result. It seems to me to make good sense to get someone in the room who can actually have a seat at the table and start working things back in our direction. That's the reason I'm running. Because I really think that I can make a difference by being in the room with a majority and by working for every citizen in Leon County. My election is November 8th, so I won't be in the primary, but I would ask the listeners to look at my website, jimmesser.com. Give me a call at any time. And look for me when I'm knocking on your door, because I'm going to be knocking on doors right up till Election Day.
And I have a feeling you'll be back in this room, too, to face one of the three Democrats that we talked to today running for Florida House District 9. So Jim Messer, Arnita Grice Walker, Josh Johnson, and Loran Osley, thank you all for coming on Political Perspectives. Produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee, Taylor Cox and Lido Rawls on the radio side. Video support for FSU, Suzanne Smith, Paul Dam, Brandy Staney, Jason Ransomare, Frankie Bertesi, and Rick Patricus. And I'm Tom Flanagan. This concludes our primary election political perspectives. We'll be back in September, and we will take some time off. We'll see you next week right here on Perspectives.
Of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.